Sup, freaks. This rip of RHR was brought to you by our good friends at CoinKite. They produce the Cold Card Q, my favorite hardware wallet. It's got two secure enclaves. It's got a full screen, full keyboard here. As you can see, if you're watching, if you can't watch, just imagine something that looks like a BlackBerry. It allows you to create private public key pairs offline in an AirGAT fashion. You never have to connect the Cold Card Q to an internet device. You can sign transactions and PSBTs remotely in the most secure fashion. If you're a Bitcoin Power user and you're looking for the best security, go pick up a Cold Card Q and go to coinkite.com. Find the Cold Card Q there. I think you can go to coldcard.com as well. Use the code RHR for 5% off. Step up your security. Get a Cold Card Q. Sup, freaks. Bitcoin is the ultimate scarce asset. Join Bitcoin macro expert Nick Bhatia at a live online event on March 17th for death, taxes, and 21 million. Learn how to shield your wealth, leverage tax-advantaged accounts, and secure your Bitcoin for future generations. Your financial advisor, accountant, or attorney might not be up to speed on Bitcoin, so invite them to join too. Register now at unchained.com/RHR. That's unchained.com/RHR. March 17th. Be there.
This rip was brought to you by our good friends at BitKey. If you have friends, family members who are newbies, they still have their Bitcoin in the exchange, help them take the first step off the exchange. BitKey makes it very easy. It's a hardware device that has a multi-sig. You have the hardware device has a key. Your mobile phone app has a key. And Block has a key in the cloud. They've designed this with trade-offs to make it very hard to lose Bitcoin. Easy to use, hard to lose. Go to bitkey.world. Use the code RHR or RHR20 at checkout to get a discount. Not sure exactly which one it is yet. Try both. Go check it out. bitkey.world. Try RHR or RHR20. This rip was also brought to you by our good friends at Stackwork. If you're looking for a great way to make KYC-free sats, Stackwork has bounties. Go to stackwork.ai, find their bounties page, and contribute to the bounties. You can make Bitcoin KYC-free for completing the bounties. If you're a developer looking to scoop up some easy sats, go check out the bounties, contribute to them, and stack some sats. Stackwork.ai.
You've had a dynamic where money's become freer than free.
If you talk about a Fed just gone nuts, all the central banks going nuts.
So it's all acting like safe haven.
I believe that in a world where central bankers are tripping over themselves to devalue their currency, Bitcoin wins. In the world of fiat currencies, Bitcoin is the victor.
I mean, that's part of the bull case for Bitcoin.
If you're not paying attention, you probably should be.
Vibes are high. Vibes are high. I'm not sure if you can hear it. We got Top Builder from Pleb Lab happening here in the comments in the background. We had an eventful beginning of the week with the BPI event in Washington, D.C. Matt, how do you feel right now?
Did you see what I named the episode?
No, not yet. What'd you name it?
I named it The Gang Goes to D.C.
Look at us. Look at us.
The last time I was in D.C. was a field trip for college.
It's been 15 years. I haven't been to D.C. since I was 18.
Definitely not my city.
No. Architecturally beautiful. I was appreciating the architecture.
It was, it's kind of unreal. You know, when David Zell first pitched me the idea for Bitcoin Policy Institute 4 years ago, it was an absolute crazy dream.
And how old was he at that time? Let's put this into perspective.
I think he had a semester left in college, and I told him to finish college, and he didn't. And he was going to finish it with honors too. He's like, "Oh, I'll complete it later." I was like, "You're never going to go back and complete it. You've already done all that effort. Just finish the last semester." He refused. And his pitch was something like, "Matt, I know you hate politics, but I would love to have you as one of the three board members." And I had promised my wife. My wife had one rule when we first started dating, that I wasn't going to get involved in politics. So I went to her and I was like, "Honey, I know we have this deal, But like, I wouldn't be a politician. This is for David. David really wants to do this thing. Like he asked me kindly, and she gave me her blessing. But anyway, that was 4 years ago. And holy shit, those guys have just put the world on their back. It's so impressive. I'm so proud of them. Their entire team has accomplished so much in 4 years. And that event was a culmination of so much work. I mean, I was blown away. Like, the audience was super strong. I was like one of four people not wearing a suit.
You look good,
wearing
though.
An $8 Costco jacket. But yeah, what'd you think? I mean, I was blown away.
I thought it was incredible. First, before I get into what I think, shout out to David, Grant, Matthew Pine, Steven, Zach, Gerald, everybody involved at BPI. Incredible event.
Mads and Mills joined their team. Zach Shapiro.
Yeah.
Obviously David Bailey. Pretty impressive.
Extremely impressive. And I think completely co-sign what you said. Insane what they have done. David and Grant specifically, this is their baby, and what they've done in 4 years at their age is extremely impressive. And not only that, extremely important. I think having BPI hyper focused on Bitcoin and getting quality information and education to the people crafting regulation around Bitcoin, like you said, like David said to you, not a big fan of politics. We've been very ardent about that over the 8 years, 7 years that we've been running this podcast. However, I think as we've aged, as we've matured, as we've had children, as we've grown businesses, we've come to realize that you may not care about politics, but politics cares about you. And in some regards, it is important to engage, and I don't want to be frontline engaging day in and day out. And so we are extremely lucky to have Bitcoiners that really understand Bitcoin, what it is, what it stands for, what it can provide for individuals around the world, championing Bitcoin on Capitol Hill via BPI. And again, I think considering everything that we've seen over the last year in terms of political activism and engagement across the spectrum of the broader industry that we're lumped into, particularly the crypto lobbying, it's very important to have the focus that BPI does. And I think the event they threw on Tuesday, the speakers they curated, the people they got in that room, is the type of high signal political engagement Bitcoin needs. And it was an incredible day. I wore a good suit.
Marty looked fresh. He was wearing an orange tie.
I was.
Him and Sailor were wearing orange ties. First of all, find out more information at btcpolicy.org. They are a nonprofit. Donations are appreciated. They also run the Peer-to-Peer Rights Fund, which is the legal defense fund for developers. That's funding the Samurai legal defense, among other cases. I think that's p2prights.org. Mm-hmm. Before I forget, also huge shout out to Ride or Die Free Connor Brown with Senator Lummis's team.
Yes.
I'm incredibly proud of him too. So this was a co-hosted event with Senator Lummis and Bitcoin Policy Institute. But yeah, look, the whole point of Bitcoin is that it doesn't require permission. You can spend or save without asking anyone's permission. It empowers individuals, and that's what makes it incredibly valuable, and why I've dedicated such a large portion of my life to the movement. That said, as an American Bitcoiner, I'd appreciate if the strongest government in human history was not in my threat model. So if you look back even a couple of, like, it looked like we could just be sent to the gulags, and we've made great progress. I would say if I was going to pinpoint it, getting all fucked up, so hopefully you can still hear me well. 10 years ago, 10 years ago, like about a decade ago, is when the regulatory trend started to go in the wrong direction, big way. And this last year is probably the first time we've seen that trend reverse. So massive progress, but there's still a ton of work to be done. And we just need to keep pushing forward and grinding.
Completely agree. And in terms of what was announced at the event, Senator Lummis has co-sponsors for the Bitcoin Act, which has been revised a bit since she initially presented it last year. And so Senator Jim Justice from West Virginia has co-sponsored it in the Senate. And I believe they have four other co-sponsors in the Senate. And then the representative from Alaska, his name is escaping me right now, Nick. His last name is escaping me. Representative from Alaska is going to present the bill in the House, and he's got co-sponsors. I believe Marsha Blackburn, representative from, or senator from.
I'm going to butcher his last name, but it's Nick Begich or Begich.
Begich.
B-E-G-I-C-H.
And from what I understand, his speech was pretty impressive. And what I was very happy to see, and actually what I was curious to see if this was going to be covered at the event, and I'm happy that the box was checked. He specifically called out the right to self-custody, the right to transact, the right to use Bitcoin in a peer-to-peer fashion, preserving that and enshrining that right of individuals into law. Looks like we're going to have bills going through the House and the Senate, or at least being presented. So it's a big day. And then on top of that, it was cool to see Andrew Hones present the concept of Bitbonds, which I think was pretty well received. Who knows if it'll be picked up and taken seriously by the Treasury Secretary, Scott Bessent. But I think it's a good idea. I think at the very least, again, going back to the importance of having very curated, focused content on Bitcoin specifically, it was a great day. And in terms of expanding the Overton window of how people should be approaching Bitcoin policy on the Hill, I think that day just completely moved the Overton window towards our direction.
I thought Pierre's keynote was great as well. Andrew fucking crushed it. On the non-Bitcoin side, though, I think one thing that is incredibly notable, and we touched on this briefly last week, but seeing it in person was a whole nother level. Paolo of Tether came to America for his first time, and he didn't come with a whisper. He came very, very aggressive and very strong. Tether's making big moves in the U.S. right now. So he did a brief fireside with Jack Mallers, and Mallers was the interviewer. And if you haven't watched that, you should go watch that. I think it was like 12 minutes or 15 minutes. But just to give you a taste of what his pitch was, one of the quotes I pulled out was, Tether is the stronghold of U.S. dollar hegemony globally. So he's playing a very ballsy game. He's playing a very dangerous game. And it's hard not to respect the hustle on how strong they're coming out. I think then he flew to New York and did a Cantor event where he also came out pretty aggressive. So for many years we've said, obviously, Tether comes with massive third-party risk. I personally do not use it. I've never used it. Sats are my stablecoin. I think the term stablecoin in general is a PSYOP, and we should really just call them USD tokens. But there's massive demand for it around the world, and they're making a shit ton of fucking money. They made almost $14 billion in pure profit last year. But the biggest risk for them, we've called it cruise missile risk. The biggest risk for them forever was basically the U.S. government going after them and going after them in a very aggressive way. And that risk seems to have dissipated. At least they have noticed the opportunity to seize the moment. And that one externality that they had might be off the table in the matter of weeks. And so I think we're seeing a big shift power-wise. We're seeing a big shift power-wise that everyone should be paying attention to, which is Tether dominance being set down in concrete and watching it kind of play out in person was kind of unreal.
It was. And to add on this, we've said it, we've been open about it for 7 years. Tether comes with centralization risk, but I respect them as a company. I respect Paolo as an individual. I think he's a true cypherpunk. I think they've stumbled into this product market fit. He said it on stage when they originally launched Tether in 2014, they thought it would be this product that maybe had $100 million market cap. It's expanded to $142 billion market cap over the last 11 years. But they're pirates and they've operated. And I think one thing he said on stage that was, I think one of the boldest things he said, not only is Tether cementing US dollar hegemony globally, but he really came at like NGOs that have been LARPing for decades about uplifting the global South and the poor and banking the unbanked. They've, as we've seen through USAID and what has been laid bare there, billions, tens of billions, hundreds of billions of dollars funneled to NGOs that have opined about this, but very few have actually had an impact on the scale. Very few, if any, have had the scale, the impact on the scale of Tether, which has 400 million wallets that have been created since its inception. So, and like you said, they are on the ground, and this is what Paolo was saying. We're on the ground. We don't see many NGOs on the ground when we're there, but who we do see are many representatives from BRICS countries that are trying to get individuals to operate, adopt the BRICS currency. And I think, I forget who it was, but about a year and a half ago, Alex Thorn from Galaxy had an individual on Galaxy Brains that was talking about the Tether, the US dollar stablecoin, or the US dollar token equivalent with the BRICS, with the stable yuan coin. Like, those are out there. And there's this really interesting case study in Ecuador specifically. You got to go find the podcast. I'll try to find the link and put it on Noster after we record. But I don't think that's something that the US government recognizes, is that BRICS countries, particularly China, are on the ground all throughout Latin America and Africa. Obviously, we know what they've been doing with the Belt and Road Initiative on the physical infrastructure side, but they're doing it on the finance side too. And the digital yuan is pretty widely adopted in Ecuador and other countries in South America. And I think that's what Paolo was saying, is like, hey, you guys are at this pretty pivotal sort of inflection point with dollar hegemony, where you sort of need us to make sure that the dollar is being adopted globally. And it will be interesting to see if the US government recognizes that and allows them to keep doing what they're doing, or if they try to stifle the innovation and succumb to the lobbyists that are backing Circle and the US banking system. There was a hearing on the Hill today, and Elizabeth Warren was essentially standing up for the banking lobby, saying, I don't think she called Tether out explicitly, but I think she was sort of alluding, we need US banks and US companies issuing and maintaining these stable coins. We can't have somebody like Tether running wild. And I think there's a very strong argument to be made that if they were to take Tether out, like USDC Circle's US dollar token is not going to be adopted by that market that Tether's serving right now.
Well, I think there's a couple of things here. First of all, I'm kind of operating under the expectation that we see a U.S. domiciled subsidiary of Tether as part of their aggressive strategy here. But at the same time, one of the trends we're seeing across like the greater VC ecosystem is there's this massive grift going on around competing stablecoins or competing USD tokens. I got to stop saying stablecoins. And I think they all realize that they can't compete with Tether. Like, Tether is dominant. Tether has the network effect. But they don't care because if they can keep up the grift for long enough, then they can cash out and make bank. So we're seeing massive overvaluations, just a bunch of capital getting burned on these so-called tether competitors that really have no chance if you logically reason it out. But I expect there to be more competitors launched. Like I've said for a while that I'm pretty sure there's going to be some kind of Sailor USD token play. I think he's eyeing it. I think it's hard to look at $14 billion of profit and not want a piece of the pie. I wouldn't be surprised if we see a Sailor play. But regardless, like I think it's going to be hard for anyone to compete with Tether. Now, all that said, on the negative side, these USD tokens represent a lot of the negatives that people have been talking about with CBDCs. I mean, Tether themselves brags about 1,000+ cases assisting law enforcement, 470+ of those cases were assisting U.S. law enforcement specifically. They've frozen $2.5 billion worth of Tether, and the subset of that is $1.1 billion with U.S. law enforcement. So they're making compliance and control and seizures and surveillance a key part of their product offering here. And that's obviously a massive concern. And I think Bitcoin does fix this. Now, long-term Bitcoin will fix this as people start to realize. I think right now what we're seeing is billions of people prefer to have dollars and they're willing to take that trade-off. Now, Jack did push out of Paolo a comment that he made up on stage that I think he immediately regretted, which he said Bitcoin is a superior product to Tether. Yeah. Because he knows his audience, right? He knows his audience. And Tether themselves, they hold over 100,000 Bitcoin. So with all that said, I would say that if we were going to have a steward of a USD token that has CBDC tendencies, I'm glad it's Paolo and Giancarlo and their team over someone else. But it is definitely something to pay attention to.
Yeah, it's a very... It's like conflicting, internally conflicting, thinking about it. Because, like I said, like completely agree with you. If anybody's going to do this, I would hope it's individuals like Paolo and Giancarlo who have proven to me that they're cypherpunks, they're Bitcoiners, they get it, they've innovated in the space. And again, it seems like Tether is something they stumbled into. They didn't realize the product market fit it was going to find when they initially launched it, and just have been serving that market as the demand for this product has grown. And he mentioned it, most of their customer base is in emerging markets where individuals cannot stomach the intraday, intra-month, intra-quarter, intra-year volatility of Bitcoin. They just want to basically have a stable currency, a relatively stable currency in US dollar exposure compared to bolivars, which we'll get to, Naira, Turkish Lira, whatever it may be. And they just want a stable savings account. So they're serving that market. And as you mentioned, this is the mechanisms to create a private CBDC, if you will, are already in place with Tether. And I think that's what Paolo was trying to get at. It's like he has this internal conflict himself, as because Bitfinex obviously services Bitcoin and the Bitcoin economy, and they're doing things on Liquid and things like that. But I think if we're being intellectually honest and just objective of the landscape and what has evolved over the last 11 years, like there is demand for Tether. As we have said, anytime we talk about Tether over the last 7 years, it's centralized risk. I've never personally held Tether. I've never used it, but it's not for me. Bitcoin is my savings vehicle. And I don't think, I saw somebody in the comments saying there's going to be a fork in the road. You're going to have to choose like Bitcoin or Tether dominance moving forward. And I just don't think that's true. I don't think Bitcoin success and Tether success are mutually exclusive. I think they're both going to have massive success. And as people learn that Bitcoin is not only a superior savings vehicle, but the peer-to-peer distributed network is superior in terms of having censorship resistance. Like over time, people that are using Tether are going to begin, if they accumulate enough wealth, learning to save in Bitcoin for the long term and use Bitcoin for transactions that the government doesn't like. And I think underlying this whole discussion is the edifice of the regulatory structure that's been built up over the last 50 years, which is seeded by the Bank Secrecy Act, which I think many people in the industry want to focus their ire on Tether and other stablecoin offerings and KYC and exchanges, the KYC AML customers, and you're swinging up branches when I think the conversation and really building on what we were saying earlier about shifting the Overton window, I think as we get these wins in the industry, we need to slowly but surely begin shifting the Overton window over the Bank Secrecy Act and having a serious conversation about the pros and cons of all this data collection and surveillance that's been integrated into the system at a legal level because of this act that was signed in 1971 or 1970, I believe.
It's time to repeal the Bank Secrecy Act.
It really is. That's like, we're getting good at shifting the Overton window. Didn't think we'd be here. Take our wins slowly but surely.
If you go to btcpolicy.org, and I hope I don't butcher his name, but there's a great blog post by Yael on repealing the Bank Secrecy Act.
Yeah. PodConf, compliance is defiance.
I thought Mallers did a great job with his keynote, basically just talking about how many ways the U.S. government has betrayed the Constitution throughout the years. I mean, I don't know what the title of his talk was, but it could have been the Constitution is a shitcoin.
I think it was Bitcoin, the next American Revolution. But yeah, that was another great. Go listen to Jack's keynote. I think it was the last one of the day. Again, shifting the Overton window, like we're debating about stuff that is arguably constitutionally illegal anyway. Like in the Constitution, it says you cannot offer any legal tender that is not backed by gold or silver. And that's just, we've completely detached from that constitutional.
That was another thing. So yeah, Jack was second to final. Then Grant McCarty, came up, and what we've discovered at Bitcoin Policy Institute is, as a think tank, we're allowed to pay a staffer for congressional offices that is technically separate of us, but we pay them and pick them.
This was so wild to me when it was explained. One of them explained it to me in New York. I was like, you could do this.
The next plan is we're going to put a Bitcoiner in every congressional office in DC. And like, technically once they're in the office, like they're a staffer of that congressman. But regardless, we're going to put a Bitcoiner in every single congressional office in DC. That's badass.
If you're a hardcore Bitcoiner that wants to shift the Overton window and educate congressmen and are willing to get into the swamp and do the hard work, maybe you have political aspirations, maybe you have legal aspirations, maybe you like this stuff.
Yeah, I think draining the swamp is a misnomer. I think we're just going to refill the swamp with Bitcoiners.
We are the swamp now. It is so weird. Is this part of, I guess, throwing it out there, having an open conversation, like, is this part of Bitcoin's maturation process? Is there, like, I see PodConf in compliance is defiance. You people are delusional. It's in jest. It's not mutually exclusive. But I think steel manning this and having an open and honest conversation about, is this the optimal route for Bitcoin maturation, playing this game? Or is the cypherpunk plant the flag in digital space and make everybody co-opt around you, the like sort of defy compliance and make everybody bend to your will? Is that the route that should be taken?
I mean, I think if you talk to Adam Back about this and his experience with the early days of the cypherpunk movement, it was always going to be a multi-path approach, both like on the legal and politics side and on the tech and education side. And both sides leverage each other. I think best case scenario, I wouldn't have to be personally involved in the politics and legal side, but kind of had my hand forced. So it is what it is. And I think we're winning. Like, I think we've made massive progress, and this process was unavoidable, but we have to just make sure not to get complacent here and that we preserve the ethos of freedom and sovereignty and private usage of Bitcoin. And try and keep all the players as honest as possible here while being realistic about it.
Agree.
Like, we're far from victory, but we're closer than we've ever been. We got to just keep pushing.
Yeah. No, we had I was very particular about my words when I was describing what Paolo was saying on stage, particularly about NGOs. We had a Human Rights Foundation here throwing an event last night at the Commons about CBDCs. And I think, and I was having a conversation earlier today with somebody about this, particularly how you pitch Bitcoin to the left. And I think what the Human Rights Foundation is doing in terms of education, grants, bounties to really push Bitcoin and position it from a position of utility from a human rights perspective is extremely important. And I think when it comes to, I think the big thing, particularly for the Bitcoin bill, the Bitcoin Act that we're trying to get through the House and the Senate and ultimately signed into law by Donald Trump, a big effort is going to be needed to be taken to convince people on the left in this country to get on board with it and to highlight.
Well, I would say, like, the beauty of freedom tech is everyone tends to see the need for freedom eventually, given enough pressure. And so, like, I'll give you one little anecdote. I have like a super lefty aunt. Like, she is, like, her favorite politician is Elizabeth Warren. They're like the same age bracket. Like, she would love to just, like, I don't know, do crocheting with Elizabeth one day. Like, that would be her dream. And I've been talking about Bitcoin for over a decade, right? And every Thanksgiving, every Christmas, just constant. And she messaged the group chat. I've said many times, I have, you know, the whole family's onboarded to Signal because it's the only way they get baby pictures. And she messages the Signal group chat like 3 weeks ago. And she's freaking out. And she's like, Elon has access to all of our bank accounts. Like, this is insane. Does Bitcoin fix this? And she was just ready to just ape into Bitcoin. And also, she was like, I don't use Facebook Messenger anymore. I can't trust Zuckerberg, like, Signal only, like, just completely flipped. And it was like 20 days into a Republican presidency. So it tends to just naturally have that tendency. Obviously, it's important to have the education and tools there, but it was kind of hilarious to watch.
It's like COVID when the lockdowns happened, everybody ran to the gun store. When riots started happening, they're like, all right, I need a gun now. Trump gets in the office, Elon, Doge get in, they have access to our bank accounts. Like, I need Bitcoin now.
Bitcoin fixes this. I was like, nothing has changed. Did you, like, your bank account was not private? What did you think was happening? She's like, she says in the group chat, she's like, but what are you doing, Matt? Like, do you trust your money in the bank account? I was like, for the last decade, I've just only held Bitcoin. How many times do I have to repeat this?
I've been telling you. Yes. Thank you for what it is. Crazy. Everybody, we've talked about this too. Everybody has their specific journey to Bitcoin and understanding Bitcoin. This is a perfect example of your aunt. I've told the story of my sister-in-law, who the same thing for like the better part of a decade. She was in banking and credit, and we'd debate back and forth about the merits of Bitcoin a lot of times and in screaming matches. And it wasn't until her boss got interested in Bitcoin and wanted to build a product around it. She was like, yeah, I know somebody in Bitcoin. And now she's working in the industry. And it's weird how what triggers somebody's sort of tipping into Bitcoin.
Love to see it. I will say that the Trump derangement syndrome is quite strong out there. So it will take a little bit longer than, particularly because he also launched the Trump shitcoin, and there's a lot of hatred towards crypto that Bitcoin is unfortunately associated with.
Yeah, it's something we need to. So everybody in the live chat and listening, after we post this to the streams, we got to brainstorm. Like, how do we signal to the broader public that like we agree? Like, this is incredibly uncouth, slimy, distasteful, not economically sound. And we agree with that, and that's why we're focused on Bitcoin. Again, that's why I think what BPI is doing is extremely important. Instead of having like the Fair Shake Act or PAC or whatever, and others trying to have like broad representation for crypto industry and lumping Bitcoin into that, it's like, no, we need Bitcoin only. A clear a think tank or a policy institute. It's a clear demarcation. Like, we think all that is bullshit, and we're going to put the case for Bitcoin only and try to do it in a bipartisan way. That was another thing I was saying this morning. Ro Khanna, his speech, he said something so benign and simple, but it was like very profound to me, which is like positioning, like nonchalantly, it was like, I don't get why there's so much fuss about Bitcoin on the Hill. It's just a technology. And like that phrase, Bitcoin is just a technology, and the nonchalant way in which he positioned that was extremely impressive to me, where it's just like, yeah, it is just a technology. Like, we should be embracing technology, and the fact that you have somebody on the left in Ro Khanna thinking that way and hopefully articulating his case for Bitcoin that way to his colleagues on that side of the aisle. I think it's simple. It's such a simple framing of Bitcoin that I really liked. I don't know if you caught that.
Yeah, no, Ro was great. And he's been a good ally of Bitcoin Policy Institute. That team has been crushing it. I'm so proud. I was going to say one more thing that I forgot. I don't know. Oh, I mean, look, a perfect example here of effective policy engagement and how effective BTC policy, Bitcoin Policy Institute, has been, is just the comparison between what's going on in the US versus what's going on in the EU right now.
Yeah.
The EU is absolutely fucked. And as an American, as someone who's building a family, a growing family in America that is based in the United States, like, I don't want to have to keep looking over my shoulder that my own government is going to try and ruin my life. And at some point, you got to just do things. Like, if not you, then who? Like, Zell came to me and Grant came to me, and they were like, we're going to do this policy thing because nobody else is going to do it.
When the Samurai 21 year, there's two 21 year olds.
When the
Grant might be younger.
When the Samurai devs got thrown in jail and the DOJ went after them after Elizabeth Warren and the Biden administration practically declared war against us, I would have done anything to have anyone else run the legal defense fund. There was nobody else to do it. Nobody else was willing to do it. You know, Saylor can say there's 100 million Bitcoiners. Who knows exactly how many Bitcoiners there actually are out there? It's part of the beauty of it. But at the end of the day, these things come down to like 10 people deciding to do something. It's pretty fucking crazy. So life is short. Like, do things that matter.
Do things that matter. You're getting dangerously close to saying the phrase.
What?
You're in the arena, sir.
No, Chamath ruined that.
He really did. No, really, but I, not to... Not to not to diminish what you just said. It's true. Like, you do have to roll your sleeves up and get in. And that's, again, extremely proud of the BPI guys, but I also think it's empowering. I think the other people in the industry are beginning to see what can be done. And again, going back to the profound nature of that event on Tuesday, for me personally, just doing a retrospective on my 12 years in Bitcoin and the journey I've taken as somebody who was just a humble sat stacker in my private life and got the confidence enough to begin writing and speaking publicly about Bitcoin and then helping start companies, starting an investment platform in the space, investing in companies, joining boards and building out what we're doing here, and then seeing what was happening in that room on Tuesday. It's like, holy shit, like, we just did stuff. And like, literally started with me writing my thoughts about Bitcoin in a newsletter, then speaking my thoughts about Bitcoin on this podcast. And then 1031 is a perfect example. Like, we were doing this show at that point for 5 years, talking about all these companies, all this tech being built, and watching as Silicon Valley and the crypto funds were throwing billions of dollars at absolute dog shit while Bitcoin companies were struggling to get funded. And it's like, all right, if nobody's going to do this, like, we should use our skills, our network, to go do it. And that's what we've done. And it's crazy to see where 1031 has come over the last 3.5-4 years. You can do stuff.
It's all coming together, fam.
It is.
By the way, I see in the Nostr live chat, and this is going to be actually kind of ironic, it's the Bugle Boys. I see Rod Palmer. I see Rob Hamilton. I see the PodConf official Nostr account in there. They just released their maxi bracket. The worst time of the year where they do their maxi madness, March Madness bracket. And I just want to put it out there. That shit's rigged because all the voting only happens on X.
That's a good point. Rob's saying I got a first round matchup against Dylan Leclerc. I thought it was Pierre Richard. I thought it was easy one and done.
All the ride or dies are on Nostr and they're not accounted for.
Is it good to win this? I don't know if it's good. Like, is it good to win or is it better to get knocked out in the first round?
It's a weird one. There's no clear answer.
I love you guys at the Bugle. That's another thing. You can just do things. The Onion, the Babylon Bee is not going to write satirical content about the space. Like, all right, we're going to fucking do it. And then shout out to them. I know they'll be facetious and cheeky in the live stream, but you guys are doing good work. I love the content you guys put out there.
I actually am honestly grateful. I'm honestly grateful. It might not seem it all the time. I still have people that believe their article about me having like big titty bitches on yachts during the bear market and not being humble, which was particularly offensive to my wife. But I'm actually grateful for them.
I am too. And honestly, their podcast, the stuff they're doing with AI, it's like, I know they're going to be facetious. They're going to think, but like, they're like actually innovating with like AI voiceover podcast stuff. I think they're like one of the first to really like go full bore into it. And it's fucking hilarious. We'll say that.
I mean, on the flip side, their AI shit is ruining Wavelake's like early bootstrapping. They just like dominate Wavelake.
Because it's that good.
It completely useless.
Does it? I don't know. We were going to keep this tight 80-minute rep. I could keep going. I'm vibing right now.
Logan told us last week, I said to Marty, I was like, we need to keep this a tight hour rip. And Logan told us that our tight hour rips are never shorter than 80 minutes. So today I said we need to keep it a tight 80-minute rip.
We're about 45 minutes in right now, Logan. Where are we?
41.
Why are you gay? Logan and I have just been making fun of each other for the last 2 days.
Yeah. We got our first cross the threshold zap on the Nostr live chat. Soap Miner zapping 21,000 sats. If you want to get great tallow soap, Soap Miner is the man for you.
21,000 sats. Thank you, Soap Miner. Excuse me, and the burping. Pulling, what was that guy's name? Robert Durst? Pulling a Durst.
So I didn't make a list because we've just been swamped this week, a lot of travel. And Marty still has a lot more to do because it's big week in Austin. There's literally an event going on outside of his studio right now. But another thing that caught my eye was Binance raised $2 billion.
From Abu Dhabi.
That's pretty massive.
What was that called? Abu Dhabi? Abu Dhabi?
That is massive. If you guess it was for about a 10% position in the company, that puts them at a $20 billion valuation.
Which makes sense to me. The
valuation wasn't public, but.
That would make sense to me.
My guess would be somewhere around there.
Yeah. Well, the other thing, going back to Trump, I'm not sure if you saw the rumors that the Trump family was exploring.
He denied it.
Did he? But if that's true, it's like, you got one more term, dude. Just get through the rest of your term and then go do whatever you want to do. Like this whole world liberty fight.
No, he's always going to do this shit.
I know, but it's such an unnecessary foot gun, in my opinion.
Bro, it's all about the grift. It's all about the grift.
I know.
Just be realistic about this shit.
I know. I'm an idealist.
The reason Trump will pump the fuck out of Bitcoin is because he's going to make a shit ton of money off of it. Yeah. You don't have to trust him. He's going to make a shit ton of fucking money off of it.
Yeah.
It is what it is. It's the human condition.
It is. Speaking of the human condition.
CZ denied it. But of course CZ would deny it until it actually happens.
I mean, CZ was in Abu Dhabi. Eric Trump was in Abu Dhabi. I was there. They spoke right after each other. So it would not surprise me if there was some little pass in the hallway. Hey, what's going on, dude? Yeah. Speaking of the human condition and getting back to the fundamentals of Bitcoin, I think this is an important story to bring up. I know we don't have a list, but this was going around yesterday. Bolivia overnight. Pull up the tweet that's quoted, please, Logan. So the government of Bolivia just rugged everyone holding dollars in their bank accounts. And instead of telling people they will get the commensurate amount in local currency, which are bolivianos, which is redeemable back to USD for 50% less. This is why Latin America needs crypto, is what Kush is saying, but they really need Bitcoin. So yet another example of a government devaluing the money of its citizens overnight. And in the case of Bolivia, 50%. So people in Bolivia woke up with 50% less money or less purchasing power in their bank account earlier this week, which is insane to think. The value prop of Bitcoin is that since it's a globally distributed peer-to-peer consensus network, no individual government, central banker, CEO can hit a button and cut the value of your money in half overnight. It's crazy that this is still going on in the 21st century. Actually, it's not that crazy. Should be expected.
I mean, to be clear, Bolivia is a brutal dictatorship, and they do a lot of horrible things to their populace, this included.
Yeah.
But it's a perfect example of using money as a tool to oppress.
Yeah.
Which Bitcoin fixes, just straight up. I guess let's read shout outs.
I don't think we have one that reached the threshold this week. I was checking earlier.
You got to reach the threshold, freaks.
Let me check.
What else do I have? Did you see?
Shout out. There's no message, but shout out to Set in Stone, who either streamed or boosted in a way where it's not populating on Fountain. 32,800 sats. No message.
Top contributor, thank you, sir, of the week. Oh, and also Silent.link zapped us 42,000 sats literally right after we hit the stop live button last week. So thank you for your service, sir. We appreciate the support, and I fucking love Silent Link. It's awesome. So I don't know if you saw this. He was one of my favorite accounts back in the X days. He's like one of the only good breaking news accounts. But Tier 10K got his account hacked.
Oh, really?
And he is saying that he had two-factor with YubiKey enabled, so a physical two-factor device. He had no connected apps, nothing in access history or sessions, no delegated accounts. It wasn't an API leak because he checked his API post quota. He had his physical YubiKey enabled, and he didn't do the like Bloomberg interview podcast scam thing that was proliferating. So his accusation is that he thinks an ex-employee got bribed to compromise his account, which is a pretty big accusation. But I would say just the fact that that's even possible is a massive vulnerability, and they should fix that. I have, you know, when these accounts get hacked, there's a bunch of people that say Nostr fixes this, blah, blah, blah. There's nuances to this shit, right? And there's, you know, Nostr doesn't just automatically fix people getting fucking hacked. Like someone can hack you and take your private key. But what it does mitigate is it mitigates a company or an employee from backdooring you. X and Facebook and TikTok, like they theoretically can post from any account they want to. Like you are at their will. Anyway, coincidentally enough, 2 days ago, I posted a blog post to Nostr about this exact topic. That just goes into depth on the different trade-offs between the status quo big tech social security model versus Nostr. And you can find that by going to primal.net/Odell and then clicking that reads button lists my long form blog posts over there.
Yeah. Yeah. If you think about it, the centralized social media landscape, the attack vector is one to many. One company with God mode can attack many individuals leveraging that company's platform. In Nostr, it's one to one. If you want to hack an individual on Nostr, you need to attack them specifically. And so it's one to one across the board, not one to many.
Think about the implications here about the world we live in, right? You can change the fucking world sending a post from the White House account.
Even tier 10K, like that, like people take that one seriously. I'm sure it gets fed into Bloomberg.
So what was the hack thing was something to pump the price of Trump coin.
Was it really?
Yeah. So there's a lot of money that can be made on these things. But you can do a lot of fucking damage. And we're not quite there yet. Like the tech is you can use it, you know, it's like alpha, like not even beta or whatever. But you can do multi-sig Nostr with Frost. So now the average user will never do this. Like the average user generating a private key on their phone, saving it to encrypted cloud storage is probably good enough and pretty convenient. And, you know, the NSA isn't in their threat model and Apple is not in their threat model and it's fine. But if you're the White House, if you're a major corporation, if you're a large account, having the ability to have multiple signers, even offline signers, hardware signers, like a hardware wallet, to send posts is a massive breakthrough. Like that is a huge step up improvement on the security model. So I think people are sleeping on this shit. Like I think
people are definitely sleeping on this shit.
As these social platforms become more and more integral in our society, we need to do better about securing them. And one of the things that this reminds me of is society's like massive dependence on phone number authentication and then the cell providers not being equipped to protect SIMs, right? Like you just see massive SIM swaps, and that industry has tried its best to improve But just the trusted model of it leaves a massive vulnerability because you are trusting a centralized entity to manage that identification.
Yeah. I was going to say something. What was I going to say? Blah, 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 blah. Hasn't been realized yet. I forget. I lost it. Damn it. It's going to be a good one too. What was it? Cum rocket. That's why you, Logan, do the voice of what we've been saying the last 2 days. We need this.
What, you are gay?
Yeah, we need that one.
Why are you gay?
we need that on the soundboard. Why are you gay? Nostra fixes this is going to take time. The social engineering, that's what I was going to talk about. Like the social engineering aspect of this is something that, that's what I was going to talk about. So it's getting socially engineered on X. Correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems like the ability to bot Nostr is much easier, considering how easy it is to spin up NSX and MPubs. But despite that, like, I don't notice many bots on Nostr, particularly malicious bots. The one bot on Nostr that I recognize is actually a very powerful and useful bot, which is the one that removes tracking links from URLs and provides you with a link that's not tracked. That's a good bot. I see that. That's the one I see the most often. But Twitter has become completely useless. The bots, like the AI bots, the Ripple Army bots, like it's worse than it's ever been. And it's honestly degrading the product, particularly notifications. Like it's not even worth checking notifications most days because the bots are insane.
Well, I think there's two things here. I think first of all, I think part of it is Nostr has the benefit that it's just not widely adopted yet. Nostr's going to have a ton of bots, and we're going to have the best bots, and we're going to have the worst bots.
Yeah, but I feel like bot moderation's better. But there are bots on Nostr, but I only see good ones.
Well, first of all, if your only experience with Nostr is primal, we do spam mitigation. So if you use like a, what some would say, a quote unquote, real Nostr client that doesn't have a server in between, you'll see way, way more bots unless you use something like UTXO's Web of Trust relay to filter through it. Now that goes to my second point. My second point is I think we can solve this stuff with, or at least mitigate it with verifiable reputation and Webs of Trust. And I'm going to write a long post on this. It's in my docket. Hopefully I'll have it out in the next few days. But I think that's how we mitigate it rather than a top-down approach. Now, the way X handles it is, I have intuitive guy. If you're just using Primal, you're not experienced Nostr. Okay, whatever. You're to your opinion.
I don't want to experience think, bot spam. So look, if that's,
I think, first of all, the number one beautiful thing about Primal is the entire thing is MIT completely false stack. So you can even fork it if you want to. But the second thing is because it's Nostr, you can go and use as many apps as you want, which is absolutely beautiful. And I think if we have more options for users, it's just strictly better. Like people should have many different options. But the way X tries to mitigate it is through KYC, right? Through phone number authentication and other different ways of doing ID checks. Obviously billing, they're using credit cards to also kind of, you see a lot of bots with blue checks, right? And so like all of those bots have paid with the credit card and have authenticated a phone number. Now, I think this is not a scalable or effective way of handling bots. I think webs of trust and verifiable reputation are a much better way of mitigating it. But it also comes down to incentives, right? So let's compare Primal's spam mitigation versus X. And the key difference is Primal's business model is not selling ads. X's business model is selling ads. He needs user numbers up for the ad sales. So he doesn't really have a strong incentive to mitigate the bot problem. The key for him is there's some kind of balance there where like it's enough bots that make his ad sales worth more, but not too many bots that ruin the experience for users, for real users, right? There's a balance. The balance isn't no bots. The balance is somewhere there in the middle where he has enough bots where you as a user still use the product or still be, you know, still remain the product. But not mitigating it too much so that his actual total view count numbers are just way low.
Yeah. And like I said, whether or not experiencing Nostr via Primal isn't the full Nostr experience. Conceded. But I do appreciate, like, and I do think, like you said, there will be good bots and bad bots. And the one bot that I do see on Primal, on Nostr, the one that removes the tracking links is useful and it's cool. That's a cool bot. I like that bot. I don't like the AI generated responses like, well, are you looking into DeFi on X? Like, no, like
my favorite bot is RectBot by UTXO, which posts when someone gets liquidated, when a trader gets liquidated long or short. And we had a heavily volatile point at one point where there was just so many posts out of RecBot that it triggered the automatic spam filter on Primal. And it was a learning experience. And we fixed how that process works. And now you can obviously see RecBot on Primal. But yeah, I mean, I think if you're saying one app is a real Nostr app versus another, you probably have already lost the plot of Nostr. But that's just my two cents on the subject. I think the cool part about Nostr is I can use it how I want to use it.
Yeah, it's like the same thing about Bitcoin.
In an interoperable way.
When people get triggered about Bitcoiners using Bitcoin in a certain way, it's like, this is a free network, a free open source, permissionless network. You can use it however you want to. If you don't like how somebody else is using it, cool. You don't have to use it that way. And hopefully you aren't using it that way if you don't like. And the beauty of Bitcoin and Nostr is that it provides the flexibility and the ability to use it in very different ways for different people, for different situations, for different risk factors, for different security setups. Like, so when you get triggered with how people use Bitcoin or Nostr, just use it the way you want to use it. And don't like, you shouldn't get angry at others for using it the way they want to. Or they do.
What else do we got? Is anything else interesting happen this week?
Yeah.
Dude, gold is fucking ripping, man.
Is it above 3,000? Where is it?
I don't know. How do you even find out the gold price? It's such centralized fucking crap.
I use finviz.com and you get a futures.
Oh, I like Finviz. I used to pay them. And then I was like, I'm only holding Bitcoin. Like, why do I fucking...
They used to have Bitcoin. They took Bitcoin off during one of the bear markets. They're like, eh. ETH BTC. Ethereum's dying. I mean, this may mark the bottom, but it seems like Ethereum's dying.
How do you find out?
Josh is saying 2985.
2985.
Just under.
I just would continue that. I think I've said this in the past, but it's like probably better for society if we ended up moving to a gold standard. But if we got everything right, except that we were in Bitcoin and gold was what got adopted, it'd be kind of frustrating and hilarious.
It'd be hilarious. You'd have to laugh.
I don't think that's the case, but
I don't either. Luckily, we're diversifying.
The gold chart is fascinating.
Where is it now?
That's one of my favorite charts. BTC XAU. We're like, how do I make this 5 years max? We're like near a 5 year high on it.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Even with gold near all time or at all time highs?
Yeah.
Bitcoin.
I mean, Bitcoin's also near all time highs. Like fucking Bitcoin's at $80,000 and people are bearish.
Yeah. We're crashing. It's over. It's over. Super cycle.
Gold is 3 point. An ounce of gold is 3.7 million sats.
Number go down. Where was it 5 years ago?
2020. No, way lower.
An ounce of gold was like 0.75 Bitcoin, 75 million sats. Throw it out there.
The only gold, I own some gold jewelry, including this great piece from Madex that I'm wearing right now.
This is my gold exposure right here.
My bull.
Shout out to Mene.
What is Madex? Madex.art. Madex.art. Go support a good Bitcoiner.
Can't see it here, but we've got an original Madex right up here on the bookshelf.
And Mene is awesome too. Also run by a Bitcoiner. And that's Mene.com. Mene is 24 karat gold jewelry. And they give you like, they have a specific formula. It's you, when you buy the jewelry, they add 20% as like their art fee of whatever the existing price of gold is at the time for the weight of the jewelry. So the prices of the jewelry adjust on the website. But the fun part of it is, so like I bought my lady so much Mene jewelry. And they give you like a portfolio page. Like I know how much, like what is the price performance of the gifts to my wife, which I just think is fucking hilarious. And it's just good UX. I just enjoy it. And you can pay with Bitcoin. It's run by Roy Sabag.
Legend. I'm checking my portfolio right now. I am up on this ring. I'm up 75%.
Yeah, what you should do is price it in Bitcoin, though. I want to know my Bitcoin price performance.
Yeah. Yeah, we have some.
If you're listening, Roy.
Some of my wife's jewelry is up 82%. Yeah. I'm up big on my gold portfolio. Blended performance of 70%.
My quote-unquote gold portfolio is just like the jewelry I bought my wife on Mene.
Yeah.
I don't really have anything else.
That is really cool how they're doing. Shout out to Mene. Shout out to everybody. Calling it now. Super cycle's over. It's not happening. Just going to put it in there. All right. It was great. Quick rip.
Love your freaks. Stay humble, stack sets.
Peace of love.